Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 1, official episode 1 of Metroidvania Mayhem. I am one of the co-hosts, Nick Stevens, and with me, again, is Michael Kelso. What's up, man?
Not much. Just been playing some games, some Metroidvanias, as usual.
Oh, yeah. It's nice, because we play these games all the time. First time we really had an outlet to talk about it. I somehow sneak it into other podcasts. Like, we did an episode of Castlevania on Retro Junkies last year. And I eventually just started going off about Castlevania and Konami and the Metroidvania games, so I was able to slip it in there. So I definitely been able to have a little outlet, but this podcast is going to be the big outlet where I can really talk about these games. So.
Yeah, I'd like to say that I slip it in on other shows that I'm on, but I don't really have the opportunity. So
yeah,
now I don't have to. So
yeah, exactly. So yeah. So as far as announcements for this show goes, you know, this is going to be our first official episode, so bear with us as we get social media going. We're definitely going to be advertising this as much as we can through Facebook, Twitter, and all the other stuff that Michael knows that I don't know. I know his podcasts do all the Google stuff that I don't do, so we're definitely going to be pushing it at those places, and you know, we'll definitely be on iTunes and Stitcher and things like that, so just bear with us as we get going, and we will have all the areas where you can find us ASAP. So, you have any other announcements you want to go through?
No, I think we'll probably keep it a little simpler than two dudes. We're actually kind of consolidating two dudes right now, so because I think I went a little crazy on the on the social media. So there's really only like four you really need to be worried about. So
yeah, I know you guys were on MySpace. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. So don't expect for Metroidvania Mayhem to be on MySpace. Sorry. I know you guys are super excited about going on MySpace and finding us, but it's probably not going to happen.
That's true. I didn't know it still existed, so that's one step further than I thought. So. All right, so do you want to do some Metroidvania news?
I would love to do some Metroidvania news. There's a few... See, this is coming out kind of... because I'm not exactly sure when our first episode is going to post. We're hoping for early February, so I'm hoping all this Metroidvania news is going to be super accurate. But if it's not, I apologize. There's a few cool games that are on the horizon that I know Nick's probably excited about. I'm excited about at least a couple of them. One of them's Axiom Verge, which is getting a lot of press right now, and yeah. I hope I pronounced that right. Axiom Verge.
That's how I would say it. So.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's a Metroidvania, first of all, but it's got like a 16-bit style. It's got this weird looking gun. I don't know, but that's one to check out. Another one to check out that I've been trying to keep my eye on is Chasm.
Yeah, that's the one.
Chasm.
I'm really pumped about that one.
Yeah, this one is straight up. It's almost like a dungeon crawler, but it's also got a lot of Castlevania style to it.
Yeah, I've watched a video on that, and even some of the movements, like the back dash, that's something you see in a lot of Castlevania games, and the way the sword is just kind of like a real quick draw, kind of like the whip and things like that. And then I saw them fight a boss called a Wraith, which looks just like Death from Castlevania, so definitely a lot of inspiration there, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I actually, I did back this one on Kickstarter, so I've been getting access to the alphas and the betas and stuff, and while they're small and there's not a whole lot to do other than just kind of traverse a couple small areas, it is extremely polished at this point. Yeah. I mean, it controls amazing, and unless they do something drastic to change it, I mean, the style of the game, it looks really good. The animations are awesome. So this is one to look out for.
Yeah. Is this on Steam or is it on any of the consoles?
It's going to be on Steam. It's going to be on PlayStation 4. I think it's probably going to be on the Xbox One and possibly maybe the Wii U. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's probably not going to be on the older systems. It's probably not going to be on the PS3 or the Xbox 360.
Yeah, that's giving me a reason to want to go buy one of the new consoles.
So, of course, it'll probably be easy to run on Steam. It's not. I mean, it's not a 3D game, so it's, you know, you're probably not going to have a souped up computer to play it. So Steam will be an option.
Yeah. Now, I'm so weird. Like, if I have the option to play that game where I can get trophies or achievements, I really want to try to do that. But where I don't have a PS4, you know, it's going to be kind of hard to do that. I probably can't justify spending $400+ just to get that game. So,
well, Steam does have achievements.
So. Oh, see, I've been so disconnected from Steam. I'm going to have to get back on it, probably because of this podcast. So.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot. We're going to have the opportunity to play and talk about a lot of games that are probably going to be Steam only. So you may want to think about getting back into Steam.
Yeah, I have it here. I logged in today, so it's definitely still there.
Let's see. Another cool game that I've kind of kept my eye on, but it's kind of fallen off the radar a little bit, is Anne. It's Anne. It's kind of like a it's a Metroidvania, obviously, but it's got a heavy Metroid-inspired look, but it's really cutesy. It's got these little robot characters. And you have a ship that you can fly around in. And yeah, I think you actually get to control the ship in this game as opposed to Metroid, where you don't really get to control it. It had a great Kickstarter. It was funded like 6 months ago or something.
Yeah.
And it blew past its funding pretty quick.
Wow. I've never seen this game. I just Googled the images, and the backgrounds of this game look like out of this world. It's pretty, like, even the backgrounds look sweet. But I see what you mean. They're very cutesy kind of art style, but it looks nice. I like it.
Yeah, it's weird because in this game, the art style of this game is kind of, you kind of have 8-bit looking characters, but then the backgrounds are, they look almost 32-bit or something, you know?
Yeah.
The backgrounds are really detailed. And then the character is, well, of course, the character is detailed, but it's, you know, using very few pixels. So it's got an interesting look to it. Let's see. I've also got, and we'll try to wrap it up here. This is going to take forever because I've got tons of these. But there's another game, a cool game out. It looks like I'm really going to probably pronounce this one wrong. Chaos Trigger, I guess. Chaos Trigger. I don't know. This one's weird. You play the role of a girl and you can summon these golems to fight beside you. So it's kind of a different take on a Metroidvania. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I just Googled that too, and she kind of looks like one of the Castlevania characters. Nintendo DS game, I think it was called Order of Ecclesia. I never can pronounce that right. It's kind of reminded me of that kind of looks. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and I'll throw out just a couple more. One of them is I'm not even sure if this one's going to be a Metroidvania, but I like it, and it kind of looks like it could be. Adventures of Pip. I really like the way this game is, what this game's turned out to be. It's a, like I said, I don't know if it's going to be a Metroidvania or not, but it's a 8-bit, 16-bit, and 32-bit game all at the same time. Oh, like, you upgrade your character from an 8-bit to a 16-bit to a 32-bit character, and you get new moves and stuff as you progress to the different bits. And you can go back down and do certain moves. You can do certain moves in certain bit, I guess. Yeah. I don't even know what to say. But your character looks different. It looks more detailed and can do different moves depending on what level of bitcher. I don't even know how to pronounce it. But it looks really cool. I don't know if it's going to end up being a Metroidvania or not. I haven't really seen a lot of videos. I just kind of seen pictures and some descriptions.
Yeah. It does look cool. The only game I kind of wanted to mention here, it's something that's already out, and I was a little disappointed by the reviews because I was real excited about this. It was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Dangers of the Ooze.
Yeah,
I believe WayForward made this game, which really got me pumped up because WayForward's made some awesome games. But I've only seen two or three reviews, and they were very mediocre, like 5 out of 10 and 6 out of 10. Said it was real repetitive.
That's a bummer. I was kind of excited for that one too.
Yeah, I'm still going to give it.
I almost picked it up the other day even.
Yeah, I'm still going to give it a chance because it is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and it is WayForward. So two, you know, things I cherish as a nerd. So I want to give it a chance. Sometimes I take reviews to heart. This time I'm going to give this a chance without really. I'm going to buy it eventually and not even think about the reviews. So that's definitely one I'm going to keep my eye on. I know it came out quite a few months ago, but something I had on my radar for a while and just was a little disappointed when I saw the reviews.
There was another Metroidvania game that came out in December that kind of got pushed under the radar a little bit called Zeo Drifter. I think it's Zeo Drifter. Came out on the 3DS. And I was kind of excited for it at first, and then it's kind of the same thing. I read these reviews, and they said it's just kind of mediocre. Like, the Metroidvania part of it is really good, but it got really repetitive, and the backtracking was tedious. I think that's something that we're going to find as we review and talk about different games going forward, is how well they manage backtracking and whether or not it feels tedious. Yeah. It's kind of an issue that you run into a lot with this style of game.
Yeah, definitely. And it's got to have smooth and fun gameplay mechanics to keep you interested in that backtracking. So if the combat's not fun, then that's a huge issue.
So you know what we haven't done yet, Nick?
What's that?
We haven't said what game we're playing this week.
Oh, man. What game is that?
That would be Super Metroid.
Oh, man. So,
for those that didn't read the title of our episode and just started listening.
It's definitely a good game, an appropriate game to start with. So it's going to be...
The game that basically started it all.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this game was on Super Nintendo. I think you can find it, you can get it on the Wii U Virtual Console today. I really don't know what other avenue you can do other than going and trying to pay all that money to get a cartridge for it for your Super Nintendo.
Yeah, you're pretty much, it's either Wii U, or I guess you probably get it on the Wii if you still have the Wii, I think. Or that's pretty much it. Yeah. Or the original cart. I looked up and actually, I found the original cart in a house of Ninja Turtle toys down in the bottom at my parents' house. I was digging through and I was actually just looking at all the old toys I had, and I looked down at the bottom of the box, and lo and behold, there was a copy of Super Metroid.
Oh, man.
had a bit of a freak out moment, because I thought I'd lost that card a long time ago or traded it away or sold it or something, but then there it was, and I found it. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah. I mean, we can talk about prices later, but that game is still pretty... I mean, just the card alone will cost you near $50, so that's it's definitely a good one to have, more on the... I don't want to say rare, but more on the valuable side. But I don't have the card. I had it on Wii U and some other means I won't talk about. But I guess the other avenues are okay that I actually own the game. So, but again, we'll leave it at that. But this game was developed by Nintendo R&D1, which is that's always an interesting story to me. Anything developed by R&D1, that's kind of like their... The main echelon, right? You're the Nintendo guy. I don't know if you can go into R&D one or not.
That's the cream of the crop right there. Yeah. If it's made by them, it's pretty much guaranteed to be awesome.
Yeah, so that's what I thought. It's definitely, when you see that, you're like, yeah, this game's going to be awesome. So, and it's definitely a game that's ranked very highly on any of the industry's top list of SNES games. So it's definitely not just, you know, the start of Metroidvania, but it's definitely one of the best Super Nintendo games out there for a lot of people.
I think IGN had it ranked at maybe number 3 or something. So on the top 100 Super Nintendo games. So yeah, it's ranked up there pretty high.
Yeah, and I think at the time, you know, kind of the history of this game and what I wrote down as the impact, it kind of revolutionized that genre without really knowing it. I don't think it really... That name probably didn't come about. I don't really know the history of the name completely, but that name probably didn't come about until Castlevania Symphony of the Night came out. And they kind of realized that, oh gosh, this Castlevania game plays a lot like Super Metroid. So, and then when other games came out like that, it kind of took on that alias. But this game really started it all. It was very unique. And, you know, in our intro episode, we talked a little bit about the original Metroid, but... It kind of had the same ideas, but this Metroid kind of took it to another level. So you agree with that, don't you, Michael? That this is kind of the starting point of Metroidvania. Great start to this podcast.
Yeah, I think I may have said it in the intro podcast that I felt like this was the start of it all. But I definitely agree. I think they kind of started it with Metroid back in the day. Before, you know what? Almost 10 years before this game, they kind of started the idea, but didn't really take it to this level until they hit Super Metroid. And it's just, I don't know, we'll talk about more when we get into the actual game discussion, but they really take it to 100 I guess is the term the kids say nowadays.
They turned it to 11. That's what I would say.
Yeah, that's better.
As far as story and background go, this is an area that you would probably be better at as far as story goes. I know it's super inspired by like the Alien movies and things like that. I'm not up to speed on some of the story. I like these Nintendo games because you got Metroid and like Zelda. The names aren't actually the main character, and a lot of people get confused by that. I know when I was a kid, I called Samus Metroid. Same thing with Zelda. I called Link Zelda until someone educated me, you know, at a very young age. So I always thought that was kind of interesting. But I don't know. Do you have a good grasp on the story? Because you probably
I've got a pretty good grasp. I mean, it's a question from Metroid 2, which came out on the Game Boy.
Yeah.
But the story basically revolves around. Samus had recovered this Metroid, the last Metroid, supposedly, and had it in this test tube, and they took it to the space station lab, and they had it in the lab. But then she gets a distress call from the lab, so she goes rushing back to the lab. I guess, wait, first of all, I should say spoilers, because, I don't know, I may be spoiling this game for somebody, but this is not going to be a spoiler-free podcast for anybody who's curious about that. But so she goes back to the distress call, and the big, mean dragon-looking thing on the cover of the box art, Ridley, is there, and she steals the Metroid and flies away. So Samus, basically the whole premise of the game is Samus is chasing down Ridley to get back this Metroid. And the story, I think the story is incredible, especially in the fact that they don't ever really have to say anything.
Yeah.
That there's not rarely any words, but you can just by actions and atmosphere, they're able to tell this really compelling story. At least I found it very compelling.
Yeah, that's one of the strengths of Metroid games is the feeling of isolation. That's always the word I use when I explain Metroid games. Very eerie. You definitely feel isolated because you don't run into any NPCs that talk to you or anything. So definitely sets the mood well for that.
Yeah, and the thing is, even near the end of the game, I don't know how far you got, whether or not you ended up beating it or gave up on it or whatever. But near the end of the game, there's sequence of events where they kind of force the player's hand to. I'll just go ahead and spoil it. And near the end of the game, you're fighting the final boss, Mother Brain, right? And she basically defeats you. And there's nothing you can do as the player. You can try. And every time you hit a button, Samus will try to get up, but she'll fall back down. And then the Metroid that you ended up saving comes flying in and basically saves the day. And it's just a really cool scene where the Metroid comes flying in and defeats Mother Brain and then revives you and gives you like this super special power. And then you have to escape with this special power. It's just really cool. I found it a pretty powerful ending, especially at the time, you know. I mean, it's, you get some games like RPGs where you get these big huge stories, but a game like this where it's more 2D action oriented, to get a story told like this was really, I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, and I didn't beat it, but I have seen and heard the ending before, just because I've started this game a million times, never finished it myself, but just And I heard a little bit about that story you just mentioned, and it's a really cool, really cool ending to this game. I definitely agree.
The little Metroid kind of sees Samus, I guess, as its mother or something.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty cool. And then it's really sad because after it revives you, the Mother Brain kills it, and it's like, oh, boo hoo, you know, shed a little tear. Yeah. I think I may have glassed over a little bit there.
You know it's powerful when, you know, 16-bit graphics can get you emotional. So
right. So you didn't beat the game.
No,
and you've tried several times to play it. So
yeah,
tell me about that.
Well, and it's funny because I didn't play this game growing up when I had the Super Nintendo. I was always a little intimidated by it because I played the original Metroid and was awful at it. So it was just one of those games I saw kind of intimidated me, so I didn't touch. As I got into Metroidvania games, I read that this was kind of the start. So I have went back to this game, and it kind of comes back to what I was talking about in many other shows. I've only ever had this game in the digital form. So, and a problem I have with digital games is that I forget I have them, whether I bought it on the Wii or the Wii U. So I'll play it for a few days and I just forget it. And by the time I go back and try to play it again, I'm lost and I don't know what I'm doing. Especially a lot with Metroidvania games, because you kind of have to remember where you were, what area of the level you're stuck at, that you know you have to get a big jump or you have to blow up when you don't have the right thing to blow it up with. So the longer of a delay between those games you play, you kind of get lost. And I have started Super Metroid probably 4 or 5 times and never beat it. And in preparation for this podcast, we started it, gosh, probably back in October, November. And I got pretty far. I got, according to the internet, about halfway. And then I stopped playing it for about a month and picked it up again a couple days ago and was completely lost. So, just kind of seems to happen a lot to me with this game. And it's not that I don't like the game. It's just I prefer the Castlevania side of Metroidvania games. And so it's easier for me to jump into a Castlevania game than to play this. But as far as the game goes, I do like it, even though I've never beat it. So, and that's kind of what's caused me from not finishing it, is just not having it on physical media. And I don't know. I keep getting lost. And when I play it, I have fun. I did. I mean, it's a little frustrating. Some of the jumping mechanics kind of get on my nerves. But, you know, it is a game in the early 90s, so you can't get too upset about that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of my excuse for not beating it.
Yeah, well, I see. I can see where you're coming from. If you don't sit and play it to completion in a short amount of time, you can get really lost in this game. The map helps because it kind of shows you where you have and haven't been.
Yeah.
But you kind of also have to remember where certain doors are and where certain types of equipment helps you. And the map doesn't show you that. So I can see where you're coming from. It's hard to come back to. But, you know, I've probably played it 6 times and beat it every time. And it's not a long game. And it takes about 4 hours to beat if you know what you're doing, or shorter if you're really good at it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, but you mentioned the controls a little bit. And, I want to talk about the controls. You said you had issues with some of the jumping mechanics.
Well, just platforming, especially in the areas where the lava was kind of at the bottom of the stage and you had to jump on the small platforms. I had, maybe it was just the means I was playing it on, but I had an awful time. I was constantly falling in the lava. And if it wasn't for those, you know, the extra energy you get, yeah, I was able to kind of find those rooms where you would just kill the same enemy over and over again and get more energy. That's kind of the only thing that saved me, because every time I get in those rooms with the crazy platforms, I would just, I don't know, maybe I was just really bad at it, but I did not like that. I didn't feel like it was, because you kind of hang in the air a little bit when you jump with Samus. A lot of flips, mm-hmm. Of course, kind of the trademark of Samus, so you can't go away from that, I understand, but I just felt like, I don't know, I didn't feel really, really responsive, because when I play the, you know, the GBA and the Nintendo DS Castlevania games, like, I feel like those platforming segments are just spot on, and maybe it's just what I prefer in that sense, but yeah, I had a little trouble with that.
Yeah, I can, there's the one issue I have with the controls is in the jumping mechanic, and it's sometimes hard to tell whether or not you're going to do a flip or whether or not you're going to do just like a regular jump. The flip will take you a lot further than the regular jump will, but if you don't hit the buttons right, hit the over button and then hit the jump button just right, she'll do just your regular jump, and then you won't jump far enough and you'll fall down. But at the same time, there's a few things in the controls that I really do like. The wall jumping mechanic is different than pretty much any other wall jumping mechanic that I've ever played, in that you have to go to the wall, point away from the wall, and then jump. You can't hit away and jump at the same time. You have to go away, then jump. And it's a little bit different, but once you figure it out, you can actually traverse the game and get to certain places that you are not supposed to be able to get to yet until you get, like, you can go up these channels that you're not supposed to be able to necessarily go up unless you have, like, the super jump, or I guess it's called space boots, or the screw attack, you know. But if you learn how to properly do the wall jump, you can actually get to all these places before you're actually technically supposed to be. And I'm sure they designed it that way, I'm sure they didn't say, whoops, we forgot about the wall jump. You know, people can actually get here. But I just think it's really cool that they have a control scheme where the better you get at the game, the further you can go faster. I mean, I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, and I probably put way more than 4 hours into this game. Only got as far as I did. I have a habit of just kind of letting my brain do nothing when I play this game, to just wander around shooting stuff. So that's probably why a lot of my time was just going around killing stuff. But yeah, I didn't know that about the wall jump real well. I noticed something weird was happening when I jumped towards a wall, and I never could figure it out. But and wasn't there some suit? I felt like I got some suit to help me jump higher. Maybe it was the boots I got. But
you can get space boots at some point that you just jump higher.
Okay.
And there's two different suits that you can acquire. You've got your regular suit, and then you've got the Varia suit and the gravity suit, which is they don't really actually help you jump or anything, but they help you go to different parts of the game.
Yeah.
Like the Varia suit, you can go into hot places, and then you get the gravity suit, you can actually go underwater and not be slowed down. So that's a couple of things that you can do. That kind of brings me a little bit to graphics, because I really like the fact that the more, as you gain things, your character changes. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, absolutely. I was going to say that too, because at that time in video game, and then that video game era, a lot of RPGs, you didn't even see that. You know, you're buying armor, you're getting new weapons, your character doesn't even resemble that. And that was always such a cool, I don't want to say evolution, but something cool I always noticed. Like when I played Diablo for the first time on PC, that game came out in the mid-90s, and whenever you would change weapons or armor, you could see the change on your character. It might have been Diablo 2, I'm thinking of, not the first one. But I was so excited by that. It made me want to get more power-ups and stuff sooner. And kind of keeps the game a little fresh. And I agree with that with Metroid, because I noticed the same thing. When you got the suit, she looked a little different. And you know, things like that. Even the different weapons, her gun, the animation of the gun would look a little different. Like it was opening up to shoot a different type of missile or whatever. So I agree, that was really cool.
Yep, even like the when you get the space boots, you can see like a little part gets added down at the boots and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool. It's a small little attention to detail. And I don't know how much, I'm not a game developer, so I don't know how much work actually goes into doing something like that. But it's totally worth it. Anytime I see a game that does that, I think it's totally worth it.
Yeah.
What about the graphics just in general?
I think they're fantastic for a 16-bit console. I mean, you know, I'm kind of looking at them right now, and the movements, and like you said, the detail, like even in her shoulder pads, you can see little creases, and just the colors, her visor being green, like kind of bright green like that, just, it really stood out. And the environment, like, and all the environments are a little different. I like seeing stages kind of vary from like spaceship looking stages to the lava to, you know, so just kind of the caves. And so the graphics were definitely top notch, kept it fresh. Yeah, and like I said, the animations are just classic with those big bosses on the screen, and the way they move. I mean, they almost move a little stiff, but it just screams classic to me. And I know a lot of the newer WayForward games, like I have a Thor game, believe it or not, on Nintendo DS made by WayForward, and the bosses on that game remind me a lot of Super Metroid. So you can definitely see that innovation from the way those bosses looked on that game to some of the stuff that's come out in the past 10 years. So definitely top-notch graphics.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it may be some of the best graphics, if not the best graphics, that came out on the Super Nintendo. I think it really sets the atmosphere perfectly. I think the backgrounds do kind of get, I mean, they're varied enough to where you can tell where you are in the game.
Yeah.
But I think it does kind of get boring at times going through caves and stuff. The one thing that I think fixes that, though, is that just when I start getting bored with one area of the game and I'm thinking, oh, I'm just going through the same cave over and over again, it introduces a new area that looks completely different. Like all of a sudden I'm in a lava level or I'm in a spaceship, like a crashed spaceship. That was a really cool part of the game when you come across this, you know, derelict ship that's crashed out, and you got like, there's the phantom guy in it. I thought that was a really cool part of the game. And another really cool part that has to do with the graphics environment is the water section. And this is kind of gameplay also, because you blow up one of the tubes that you've been running through. You actually blow it up to get into the water section, which I thought was really, really cool. I also really like the animation on Samus when she's standing still. She's just kind of breathing. She's got this really heavy breathing. I don't know if I always imagine that that suit's really heavy or something, you know? And that she's just kind of resting, and it takes a lot for her to just kind of stand there and hold up all that armor.
And like you said earlier, I mean, that's something very little, but when you add all those little pieces of attention to detail up, I mean, it just makes it 10 times better of a game. I noticed that too, and as you said that, it just kind of brought back, you just because a lot of games don't do that kind of stuff when you stand still. I know, like, you know, Sonic on the Genesis, he'll tap his foot and do stuff like that, which I just thought's brilliant. So I'm a big fan of the of just animations like that in general.
Yeah, I think it's cool because there's really no reason to do it, right? Other than to just kind of set the atmosphere. So I mean, I don't know. It's just, I just like it when they do stuff like that. I think it's really cool. But
Absolutely.
yeah, I think the graphics just in general are just amazing on this game. The something about the, I kind of mentioned the breathing thing and the how the graphics. I like what you said about the colors. I know this doesn't have anything to do with breathing. I was actually trying to go to something different, and then I thought about the colors. So bear with me.
It's like
Bear with me, people.
squirrel.
That's me. That's me. No, but the I like I like the colors because I think somehow something both the original Metroid and this Metroid game does, something that it does really well, is it creates this brooding atmosphere, but with really vibrant colors like purples and yellows and reds and bright greens. But at the same time, you've got this real atmospheric, like dark loneliness to the game. And what I was trying to do here, and I'm trying to do like a really neat segue for all the listeners, is sound and the music, because I'm talking about this brooding loneliness atmosphere. And I think what really sets that off more than anything else in the game is the music and the sounds that the game shows off. There's really minimal music for the most part, except for there's parts when it kind of hits home, you know, not hits home, but it kind of really hammers it home, the idea that you're doing something, like when you're fighting a boss or you're changing areas, the music changes and gets louder. It feels like it changes and gets louder anytime you're going into a new area or getting ready to fight a boss or something. And then it kind of quietens down whenever you're not fighting. I don't know. Maybe that's just all in my head, but for some reason, it felt like it was doing that.
And it reminds me of when you get like a new item or new ability, that little jingle that plays. I had the same feeling when that happened as like when you do when you open a treasure chest in Zelda. Like it's like a feeling of accomplishment. Like, oh, I found something. That's awesome. And it just kind of plays like this victory music, you know, little jingle. So, and that's one thing I'll never. It's one of those little tunes that I can always kind of hum when I think about it. Is that little da na 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 na. Like I love that about this game in general, and of course with Zelda. I just had that same feeling when I find something in those games.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I'm going to go off on another little tangent here and tell you a story about my first SNES that I ever had. I had the Met I had Super Metroid, and I had a SNES that had a broken sound chip, so that instead of making normal noises, it made like these weird noises like that, and it always really threw me off. But Metroid, for some reason, and even though the noises were not the correct noises, it always still kind of made sense to me. So it was always one of my favorite games to play on my old broken SNES. But that victory noise would never play. So every time I would get an item, you know, you can't move until the song's done playing. And you can't skip it or anything. So I would always get really confused, like, why can't I? Oh, what's going on here? Is my game freezing up or something? But it was just because for some reason that broken sound chip would not play the victory tune whenever you get the new item.
I like it. That victory tune could be like our segue music.
Yeah,
I like it.
it works for me.
That's cool. But
But
yeah, I
don't
mean,
let the listener fast forward through it. They have to sit there until it's done.
that's right. You just kind of freeze. Or if you can ever find you know, your SNES with the broken sound chip, we could record that sound and
make I've that still art. Got it somewhere. I don't think any of it works anymore. I think even the broken parts don't work anymore. I mean, even the parts that weren't broken don't work anymore.
Yeah, oh, that's cool. I mean, yeah, I mean, as far as music goes, I mean, like you said, there's not a lot of epic scores in the game except for, you know, some of the boss battles and stuff. But yeah, it definitely suited the game, and I think that's great. Sometimes no music almost makes the environment better at times. You think about playing like a survival horror game where you don't hear any music at all walking down a hallway. You know something's about to happen, and it kind of gives you that eerie feeling. So I think that kind of plays a good part of Metroid, a Super Metroid in that sense.
Yeah, I think this is actually kind of a survival horror game almost. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, because you have a limited number of missiles and stuff, and you're always, I don't know about you, but I was always kind of running out of the missiles that I needed at the time.
Yeah.
Like the super missiles and stuff. And you're all alone, and there's very little music, and there's always these weird noises and stuff too that happen, like are they almost sound like crickets or something sometimes, you know, just these little, I don't know if it's the music or if it's just the sound effects or if it's just, it's almost like this game has both at the same time, like it's meshed together. You know, some games you have sound effects and you have music, right? This game, the two kind of mesh together to kind of create one uniform, just sound coming out of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the gun noise, like the sound of your gun and the sound of your jumping and stuff, but there's also all these little other noises that I don't know if it's the bad guys making the noise or if it's part of the song that's making the noise, but it's just kind of creepy. And if you play this game in the dark, it's kind of creepy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And even the original Metroid, like that intro kind of jingle, whatever what you want to call that. That always kind of freaked me out a little bit. Just had a kind of a cool eerie feeling to it. So.
Yeah. And like when you turn this game on, you start this game, you get the, I guess it's the noise that the Metroids make.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a squeak or a squelch noise. You know, it's like, I don't know. I don't even know what it sounds like, but that's what you hear when you first start this game. And you hear that at different points during the game, like later in the game, whenever you go into a room with Metroids and stuff, it's cool. It's creepy. I dig it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you brought up a point of this kind of being a survival horror game. And when you said that, it kind of made me think of like playing Resident Evil. Almost reminds me of Metroidvania type games because you're backtracking a lot and you're getting new items to get into new areas of the world. So I mean, that kind of reminded me. It's kind of random that I just said that, but kind of it's neat how this kind of lended a little bit of survival horror aspects to it, and then you know some of these survival horror games kind of went back to the backtracking of Metroid, things like that.
So I mean, I guess you could technically kind of call Resident Evil a Metroidvania if you want to go on the loosest definition of that we've talked about. You know, where it's just you get new items and you can go to new areas, right? So it technically would be a Metroidvania then. It's just not as action packed, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. So I guess that means we get to play Resident Evil on this show, right?
Yeah, I dig it.
there's a remake coming out, I hear.
Oh, yeah. That looks awesome, too. It's like the remake of the remake of the remake.
Yeah.
It looks good, though, because the remake on the GameCube was an awesome game. And then this is even making those graphics look even better. So yeah, it's going to be pretty cool.
Okay, so ultimately, did you find this game fun? Do you think you'll ever finish it?
I don't know. I can't promise that. But
if I mail you my copy of the game and you promise not to break it, could you finish it?
Maybe. I'd probably play it out of guilt then because you took the time to mail it to me. I'm that kind of guy. I'd feel guilty and just have to do it. But yeah, I think eventually I'm going to finish it. Whether or not I might have to sit with a strategy guy beside me so I don't forget anything, but it definitely doesn't hold your hand like some of the more modern Metroidvania type games do, and that's one of the reasons I like the Castlevania DS games kind of the most, because you play the game on the touchscreen and then on the folding part of the screen is the map, so you don't have to keep pressing start to look at the map. You always get the map right in front of you, so it kind of holds your hand a little bit more than this does. And some of the more modern games, I feel like, kind of explain to you what you need to do from stage to stage, and this one kind of, you know, it's an older game, so it's gonna beat you up a little bit. So I think eventually, yeah, I will beat it. Maybe that's the goal before this before so many episodes of this podcast, I'll beat this game. So
we'll do something
like that.
We'll hold you to that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
No, I think you're right about the difficulty, though. I think it's got a pretty good difficulty curve too, because I talked to you, I guess it was last night or two nights ago. I was trying to beat it again before we played the show, before we recorded this show. And, you know, I played through most of the game pretty easy, but it starts to really ramp up near the end. And then it all culminates for me with that Ridley battle, which is really, really hard. And I probably tried it 10 times before I finally beat him last night at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. But, it kind of gets easier after you beat Ridley because it's more story driven at that point. But
yeah,
the difficulty really ramps up. I like the difficulty curve of this game. I think it kind of starts easy and gets harder as you go, but you get more powerful as you go too. So I don't know. I just think it's cool.
Difficulty curve. And it's one of those games where you do die, you kind of realize, okay, I need to do this way this time. It's not a cheap kind of difficult. It's just a learning the patterns and kind of like playing a game like Contra. You know, it's difficult, but you know why you died. You know, I didn't do this here, or I need to do this better here. So it's not a frustrating difficulty. I guess I'm more frustrated just by I'm always getting lost because I take too long in between gameplays. So.
Obviously, I feel like I've been gushing pretty hard about it. So if somebody were to ask me if I liked it and thought it was fun, then obviously I do. I think it's probably, I would be hard to press to say that it was my favorite Super Nintendo game, but it's probably right up there, at least in the top five, maybe top three for me. So I love this game. That's all I got to say about that.
And I think if I would have played this in my childhood, like I should have, I probably would have kind of said the same thing. I don't know if I can say the same thing right now, just the fact that I had to go back in time and play this game. So it's a little bit more difficult for me to say that, but it's definitely a gem, you know, in the library of Super Nintendo that I think everyone, especially Metroidvania fans listening to this, need to give a chance. If not for a fun game, but just for nostalgia's sake, to see where that formula was kind of laid out at. I definitely appreciate it for that, and would definitely recommend it to someone looking for a good game to play on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, and I will say that as far as going back and playing this game, if you've played a lot of more modern Metroidvanias, kind of like you said, they kind of hold your hand a little bit easier. This game's a little harder to go back to.
Yeah.
Even just, I'm not sure when Symphony of the Night came out. It was just maybe a year, two or three at the most after this game.
Yeah, 95, 96, something like that.
Yeah, so it wasn't long after this game. Even from Super Metroid to Symphony of the Night, Symphony of the Night did a lot of things to improve the format and the formula. So this game is sometimes hard to go back to. It's easier to go back to if you got the gigantic nostalgia goggles on that I have, but I still think it's definitely worth the trip back to play. If for nothing else, like you said, just to see where this idea originated in its fullest form. You know, like I said, you can go back to Metroid and get an idea of what they were trying to do, but this is when the idea truly takes form and starts this genre off, you know?
Yeah. And I was a little off about Castlevania. It came out in 97, Symphony of the Night, but yeah, I agree. Even Symphony of the Night, if you've played some of the newer Castlevania games in that genre, even that's a little harder to get back to. It's much easier than Metroid, or it's much easier than Super Metroid, but I still had to, I still struggled through some of that, kind of like I did with Super Metroid. But I think just being a big Castlevania fan overall kind of helped me get through that game. We'll definitely talk about that in a different episode. So, but I just wanted to correct myself there before any listeners started sending us nasty emails.
Gotcha. So we were going to try to give this game a grade or a rating, but we didn't really talk about how we were going to do that. So we're going to try to figure that out as we record, I guess. So,
oh, wow.
this may be interesting.
On the spot grade, I don't know.
I don't know. We can give it a number grade, but I don't really like number grades. We give it a letter grade.
Letter grades are good. I don't know. Yeah.
Like, we're in school. Let's go back to school. We'll give it like a letter grade.
Okay.
We can do that for all games. That's fine.
That works for me.
I think that'd be easy.
Yeah.
I give it a plus. Just because I think it's, I guess a plus is perfect, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not technically perfect, because if you think about school, then some schools say 97 to 100 is an A. So this is just barely an A plus, right? This is like the 97 A plus.
Yeah.
Because it's not perfect, but it's at the head of the class. You know, it's got a 4.0, maybe a 4.25. I think this is, it's leading the way back in its day. I don't know. Of course, a lot of mine's nostalgia, but it at least gets the plus from me for nostalgia. It was an A, then I put on my nostalgia glasses, and all of a sudden a plus sign appeared. So I'm giving it an A plus.
Okay. Well, it would be almost blasphemous to come on this podcast about Metroidvania and not give this an A, but I'm going to go ahead and say it's an A minus, only because I'm a bigger Castlevania fan than I am Metroid. So spoilers, I'm probably going to be giving Castlevania games an A+, but it like I said earlier, it set the groundwork for the games that I love so much in this genre, so I can't give it below an A, and I don't really want to. I definitely say it's definitely one of the better games in this genre, and of course, like I said, it started, so I definitely can't go any lower than an A-, so I'm going to say A-.
And just so the listener knows, I can play devil's advocate on the other side of the coin when we get to the Castlevania games.
Exactly.
So, we're going to have a nice dynamic here, because
agreed.
We'll talk about it when we get to there, but I'm probably going to be in the same boat as you with Metroid games on the Castlevania front, but it'll be interesting, because I've actually never, I almost beat Circle of the Moon, but I never actually beat any of the Metroidvania Castlevania games.
Oh man. Yeah.
So,
and Circle of Moon was probably the hardest. That last boss took me days to beat. I mean, days upon days to beat. So
I think I probably made it to the second to last or last boss.
Yeah.
And had trouble with him and just never did finish it. So
yeah, it was rough. Like it was one of those things where I wrote down the patterns so I could like sit there and look at it on the piece of paper and then remember what to do. It was that rough. So, but I've pretty much beat all of them, I think. So. And there's one in particular, I'm not going to spoil it, but there's one in particular I probably play once a year because it's probably my favorite of all time. So kind of a spoiler, but I'm not going to tell you exactly which one that is till we get there. So.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. So we can't really rank the game yet. I guess we can. It's number one because we haven't talked about any other games yet. So.
It's the best one we've talked about. So.
Yeah, this is the best Metroidvania game we have ever talked about up to this point.
That's right.
We kind of already touched on pricing a little bit too, but yeah, it's pretty expensive if you're going to get the cart.
Yeah, and the average price as of today, which is January 15th, 2015, the pricing chart showing it an average of $44.53 loose. Complete is $85.38. That's complete as in used. And then brand new, if you're ever so lucky to find this factory sealed, would be $455. So,
wow.
Definitely a expensive one.
And I would almost say that you said the difference between complete and loose was like 40 bucks. I would almost pay the extra 40 bucks to have this one complete. I think if you're thinking from a collector's and a value standpoint, I think that value is going to increase.
Yeah.
More that gap is going to widen as we move forward and things disappear. Things like boxes and manuals disappear.
And I get mad because when I started collecting retro games again, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I saw this in stores, some of those retro stores for like 20 bucks and thought, that's too much money. And now I've seen it over $40 now, so even loose. So it's one of those things I definitely smacked myself in the face for passing it up for $20.
Yeah, I'm just really glad I found mine in my exactly. old toy box. The funny thing is, when I found it, it kind of scared me. There was a giant hole in the back of it. Like for the plastic, I guess one of the turtles, it just needed some practice, something to practice on. Started beating the crap out of the cartridge, but the cartridge had a giant hole in the back, and you could actually see the board inside. And I said, "Oh no, I found this game, and it's not going to work." But works fine, works perfect. So
that's awesome.
That's a cartridge for you. If that was a CD, I'd hate to think of what it'd look like
Yeah.
and how it'd work.
No kidding. And I I've had a lot of some of those retro games that I wish I had now that I had back then. So that's cool you were able to find that in an old box of stuff.
Well, we don't have any listener feedback,
Nah.
so.
Other than, the ones who've heard this podcast so far think it's awesome, which that's me and you, so
Yeah, I guess I could call in and say, "Hey, Nick and Michael, I love you guys. This is an awesome podcast."
I think the great thing, I think our listener base is gonna be pretty good starting off because we bring a very diverse crowd from, from my side of the Sega and your side of the Nintendo. It'll be fun to see that who follows us over here, just kind of
Yeah.
advertising, because I'm definitely going to advertise this on all my social outlets. So.
Oh yeah, I am too. And we haven't really discussed this too much with our retro junkies brethren, whether or not they're going to accept our show or not into that fold, since it's going to have a lot of modern stuff. But
Yeah.
we may get a few people from there too, and I'm pretty sure they'll let us in.
Yeah, I think so. I think we got some pull over there.
Maybe
So.
a little bit.
Just a little. Awesome. Well,
Yeah, that's pretty much the show, ain't it?
I think so. I think that went well. I felt like it was pretty natural and smooth. We definitely love our Metroidvanias. I don't think it's gonna be very hard to talk about these games.
No,
So.
it's going to be pretty easy.
Yep.
So we're eventually going to be on iTunes and Stitcher.
Yeah.
And the best thing that the listeners can do for us is what?
Give us reviews.
Yeah. Especially here in the early stages, because we get to get a little taste of that new and noteworthy on iTunes.
Oh yeah, big time.
That helps out a lot, so.
Yeah, and send us money too. That's good. I'm teasing.
Yeah, we'll set up a PayPal where you can just send us all kinds of monies and games. We'll set up a
Games.
Steam account where you can send us games.
There you go. That'd be perfect. All right, well, since we don't really have an official email or Facebook, I guess we could just end this right now. We eventually will. Hopefully you found us that way through Facebook or Twitter, and so you don't really need to know that information quite yet, so.
Right. It's probably going to be blah blah Facebook Metroidvania Mayhem, blah blah Twitter Metroidvania Mayhem,
Exactly.
unless somebody else out there has already stolen our Metroidvania Mayhem name,
I don't think they
which I
have.
doubt.
Yeah,
So
I tried to look before we recorded. I Googled it and I couldn't see anything, so.
I'm pretty sure we're going to have that. So
Yep.
if you're listening to this for the first time and have no idea where the social media is, just type in Metroidvania Mayhem and you'll probably find it. And as soon as we have things like logos and whatnot, then we'll just go ahead and get that set up anyways. So, all
That's right.
right.
All right, man.
It's been fun. I don't know. Do we play music for the next week's game or anything like that?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's drop some music here. Hopefully someone can guess what this next game's gonna be. It's a good one.
If you know what it is, we'll give you a big old pat on the back.
That's right. No
You
prizes
may
here.
have to drive to Tennessee or West Virginia to get it, but we'll give it to
That's right. The nice East Coast that we live on. So
Yep.
I'm just glad we're in the same time zone. I've been on another podcast where everyone's in a different time zone, so that's always difficult.
Yeah, whenever we're scheduling guests on the Two Dudes Show, I'm always thinking, man, I really hope they're in the East Coast.
Yeah. And poor Rob McCallum, he's been on all of our shows, and he over there in Nevada, so.
Yeah, didn't he come on at like 5 o'clock in the morning for NES podcast one time or something?
Yeah, and I had no clue. I didn't realize where he was, and I said, "Yeah, we're gonna record at 8 o'clock or whatever it was, 7 or 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time." He was like, "Okay," didn't even know until he got on the show. So if you're
Didn't
listening,
even complain or anything.
I know. So if you're listening to that, Rob, to this, we appreciate that.
He got up pretty early for us too, so I definitely appreciate him.
Yeah.
I tried to help him out last time he was on, and tried to do it at late at night, like 11 p.m. or something. So.
Yeah, which is probably like noon for him. So.
Yeah, I don't know. He's all the way on the other side of the world as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
Okay, I guess that's enough rambling.
True, yeah. All right, so with that, we will catch you all later.
See ya. We'll be right back.